Today is May 23rd, 2018, and this is episode number 463 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am anxiously waiting to hear from you. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. I'm going to get that right one of these days. If you'd like to comment or question, comment on or question anything, I'm going to get that right too. Anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/groups/context machine.
You did so great, and I believe in you. One of these days, you're going to nail it.
I'm going to nail it. I'm just, if we keep practicing.
Now that's just crazy talk.
Yeah, I know. It's just a fantasy. Whoa.
It's not the real thing.
Right. So we have topics.
Mm-hmm.
We have topics. I'm writing down that fourth one. We might actually get to a fourth topic today.
We might. Or we might have trouble getting through two before we run out of time.
That is also a possibility, especially if you look at recent trends. Speaking of trends, mm-hmm. Our first topic is going to be a Twitter rant, trending topic.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
We haven't complained about anything for a long time.
I know. It's been ages. We're also going to talk about Siri and AI and Apple and WWDC.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about... Then we're going to talk about the FBI's claims about how many phones it had that it couldn't unlock.
Mm-hmm.
No spoilers. You and know then me. If we get to it, we have a fourth topic. Now, we're not going to mention that topic because maybe we'll have to use it tomorrow on TDO. We don't want TDO listeners to think they're getting sloppy leftovers.
Yeah, that's really smart. That's a great idea.
Yeah, so we'll just... if we get to it, it'll be great, right?
Right. And, of course, now, if we don't get to it, people will be wondering tomorrow which topic was the one that they just bumped from ACM.
Right. Unless, of course, we actually get to the fourth topic.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. I guess, alternately, we could have not said anything about the topics, and then people would have never known if we decided to push a topic to...
Yeah, but, I mean, that's just not how we roll.
Clearly.
All right, so here's the deal. Twitter has lost its mind. Twitter, the people at Twitter have gone
off the rails.
Poop crazy. Bat poop crazy.
So Brian, what has you thinking that everyone at Twitter has guano on the brain?
I don't know if it's everyone at Twitter, but it's whoever made this decision, right? I mean, okay, first they cancel their own. Gosh darned! I really want to pot point out the crap out of this topic.
I appreciate that you don't, because I really, really don't want to do edits.
Fair enough. They there was the inexplicable decision to kill their own Mac client. Like, they took the best, they bought the best Mac Twitter client. They bought it. They hired the developer and they bought it.
And then they took the Twitter client, they slit its throat, and crapped down its neck.
Yes, they did. And then let it bleed out until it was like all congealed.
By the way, none of that is sanitary.
None of that. Not even a little bit of it. It's a terrible idea. They took the principles from the Mac client, which was, I think, was probably at the time the best Twitter client for any platform.
Yes,
and they ported it over to iOS, where it remains the Twitter's own iOS client remains fine. They haven't done a lot with it, but they have updated it.
But at least it isn't a dumpster fire.
Right. And then they let the Mac client, the one that they bought, the one that they took off the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a product. It was an existing product. We could buy it. We could use it. We could use it to do the Twitter tweet stuff. And they bought it, and they took it off the market, and then they just let it sit forever and ever and ever. Never. Mm-hmm. And then Dave Hamilton had to go and start complaining about it on the Mac Geek app.
Oh, and they were listening and they're like, fine, Dave, we'll just pull the product completely. We'll show you.
Yes, they did that. They just pulled it. They just yanked it away. They're like the Twitterers can eat our browser cake. Except it's not cake, it's poop. I don't want to do Twitter on a browser.
What's
I don't
want to do Twitter on a browser today.
I don't Twitter. Twitter is my fecal fixation.
Of course.
It's Twitter. This is their fault. They're wallowing in poop. It's infuriating me. And I haven't even gotten to the new bit. Right? So they pull the Mac client. They just say, "Nah, you know what? We're just going to pull it. You can use a third-party client or you can use the interwebs. You'll like it.
Your rant so far is already so entertaining. I really wish I'd made popcorn. But carry on.
I am not entertained. So now what Twitter announced was they had actually pre-announced this.
Mm-hmm.
So the new announcement was.
So if it's pre-announced, it's just announced.
It was an affirmation.
Okay.
It was an affirmation that they're going to do the thing that they'd already promised to do, which is to greatly reduce the effectiveness and availability of their APIs that third-party apps use to make third-party Twitter apps useful. So, like, in other words, the tools that Twitter provided to developers so that developers could pull data from, you know, Twitter's platform in order to make a functioning third party independent client.
Okay, so what Twitter's doing is hobbling all third-party Twitter client applications and saying, look, you should just use our apps instead. And people are saying, but guys, there's no Mac Twitter client from you. And Twitter's coming back and saying, lol.
Pretty much. Use the browser. Well, guess what, Twitter? I don't want to use the browser. And I'm not going to use the browser. I will likely end up consuming a fraction of Twitter content. It's not convenient to me to manage my Twitter experience from a browser. It's not convenient for managing multiple accounts.
Oh man, no, it is not.
It's not the way that I want to consume or use Twitter. And I don't give a rat's crap hole about Twitter's desire that I do it that way.
You know, you should have gone with rat's fecal fountain.
That is much better. That is much, much better. I'm kind of bummed I didn't.
Well, it's okay. We'll edit it. And no one will know the difference between
No, no one will know the difference.
It's great.
So I don't get it, man. I don't even think this is Chaffin's razor going on. I don't even think there's missing information. I just think that Twitter's lost its freaking mind.
You know, I agree. I think Chaffin's razor does not apply in this case. I think this is part of a very intentional plan to push people away from third-party Twitter clients. Twitter wants to control the whole experience, which, of course, also includes displaying inline ads.
That's fine, but make a Twitter... I was a happy Twitter-incorporated Mac client user. I was quite happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Make a Mac, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to see the third party developers who honestly helped make Twitter into what it is. Right. A lot of influencers. That's what social media, you know, calls popular people on their platforms, right? A lot of influencers use third-party tools because they provide services and techniques and methods of posting that Twitter doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right. So even if huge numbers of people aren't using these third-party clients, a lot of influencers do.
And you do. So there you go. Totally supports the influencers.
I'm flexing my
your influential muscles.
Yes, exactly. Right now, it's pretty impressive too. And
that's a lot better than flexing your fecal fountain.
It's not that I want the third party guys to be shafted, but if Twitter wants me to use Twitter's tools, Twitter could provide me a freaking Mac client. And if that Mac client is going to display ads, that's fine. I'd actually rather pay and not have the ads, but whatever. They're not going to give me that option either. If they're going to, I mean, make the client that does the things that they want. Don't try to steer me to your bullcrap fecal fountain browser experience because it's crappy. It is a crappy experience. Now, if you are listening to this and you think that using Twitter on the browser is just fine, that's great. More power to you. I'm happy for you. It doesn't work for me.
Are you sure you're happy for them?
Yeah, I'm fine. People can choose what they want.
Okay.
People can choose what they want. I don't understand that. Do you have any kind of like mollifying words of wisdom, some kind of explanation that can shed any light on this?
Well, I certainly can't offer you anything that's, well, okay, here's what I can offer you. My hypothesis, which is that Twitter has decided somewhere along the way that third-party clients are not good for their business. Therefore, they are going through this slow, methodical, systematic process where they are making third-party clients less and less appealing. And the effect of that, ultimately, they hope, is that everyone moves over to the Twitter web interface or to the native Twitter client apps on whatever platforms those are available.
Mobile.
Yeah, I guess it's just like mobile now. Also,
I don't think there's a Windows client either. I haven't actually researched that because, you know, Brian, but I don't think there's
a
Windows client either.
Yeah, they're killing their Twitter client support for apps on game consoles. So that's why? Out. Well, because now you're not in the total Twitter controlled experience. If you're using a game console app,
I don't get it. I can understand Twitter not wanting third-party apps. I think that's short-sighted and stupid and also ignores the fact that these third parties did help them grow, mm-hmm. especially back in the days before there was a Twitter client, before there was a Twitter-owned client,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's short-sighted, but I can at least understand where that might come from. But I cannot justify... there's no rational world in which Twitter wants to do away with third-party clients, but then kills its Mac client. And just, you know, I mean, it's not that hard to manage a client, especially when you have the resources that Twitter has. I mean, just make a client, get some coders, make a client, make the client and have to do the client things.
But the thing is, they already had the client app.
They already had the client. All they had to do was update it. They hadn't updated it to support 280. They hadn't updated it to support like any of the things that they've added in the last like year or so. We just update the client, hire the developers and make the client or update the client. Here's the thing. They still have the client. Right? They just won't sell it. That's true. Need some people to freaking update it.
Yeah, I'm certain like that code they vanished. Code.
Oh, it's just infuriating. F you, Twitter. F you. I tweeted that, except I didn't abbreviate anything.
So you spelled out Twitter?
Yeah, yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
that's exactly what I did.
I really think this is all about wanting to push people out of all third-party clients. And it's just
right.
Time.
It probably is. So give me the first-party client.
Yeah. And now see here's the big problem with their strategy. There's a lot of people that prefer to use a client app because they just prefer it, or they need to deal with multiple accounts. So
yeah,
they should be offering a Twitter client app of their own for the Mac.
It should be state of the art. They should do what Apple does. And every time a third-party client comes up with something awesome, they should steal it. I don't actually want them to do that, by the way. I don't like it when the big companies steal from the little guys that are coming up with stuff. But I mean something that from a actually making your user base happy, that makes a lot more sense than just steadily making their experience worse. And that's what they're doing. They're just steadily making our experience worse by removing features. I mean, it's like Apple on steroids. Like, oh, hey, we're making more money than ever. Let's stop making displays. Oh, hey, we're making more money than ever. Let's abandon the Wi-Fi space that we helped create. You know, hey, a whole bunch of people depend on us for their home networking needs. So let's just go ahead and abandon that. Let's let all these other companies who don't have the resources or care as much about security. Let's let them handle that. Oh, hey, gosh, we're making more money than ever. Let's stop updating our productivity apps. That seems like a great idea. But this is like even more malicious than that. Twitter is being far more malicious than that.
Sure. Yeah. This isn't. No, wait, let me start that again. This is about manipulating your user base. And I'm not saying that in like they're trying to get us to all jump off the bridge together, just like our dad asked us if we would do when all our other friends did it. This is about manipulating us to find all other Twitter experiences inferior to the one that they're providing.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, man. None of it makes any sense.
I'm wondering, how much information does Twitter not get to collect about our activities when we're using a client app, a third-party client app, as opposed to
the web interface? Well, then require that. Require that disclosure from the third-party Twitter app companies. Make that a condition for using the APIs.
Yeah, which actually
not that I'm wanting that to happen
into the API.
They could build it into the API. That's right.
Yeah, I really think this is all about wanting everyone to drop all third-party access
into Yeah, it Twitter. Is, but give us the first-party access.
And this is the big problem. Well, it's part of the big problem. If you're going to tell us, hey, don't use these products from other companies, then you better give us a product we can use.
Yep. Really doesn't make any sense to me. All right, let's.
Do you feel better Siri, now that you've gotten that off your chest?
No, I don't. I'm just all cranked up and worried and annoyed, not worried. I'm annoyed as crap, as like I am a living fecal fountain.
That is so not sanitary. You're not going to get the damage deposit back on your place when you move.
It's true. I'm not. Right. So Siri and AI, you asked a question in our pre-show.
Mm-hmm. And the question that I asked was, Do we need to hear something big from Apple about Siri and artificial intelligence and improvements to Siri at Worldwide Developer Conference? Is that a good paraphrase of what I asked?
Yeah, more or less. Actually, you said, does Apple need to announce something at WWDC? That was a short version of what you asked.
Yeah. Okay.
And, all right, ready for my answer?
I'm ready.
My answer is going to surprise you.
Okay.
No.
Then why do you think Apple does not need to make any announcements about Siri, improvements to Siri or artificial intelligence?
Apple not improving Siri in 2 weeks, or at least publicly announcing an improvement in 2 weeks, is not going to kill Siri. It's not. There's nothing that Apple has to do at WWDC.
It's their show. They can do anything they want.
No, I don't mean it that way. I mean there's not going to be a failure or success based on.
So it's not a break point for Apple.
No, it's not. I mean, AI is a long game. We're such in the early days of AI. Now Apple is getting its butt kicked. Apple is getting its butt kicked at the very least in the sphere of public perception.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say they're getting their butt kicked in the perceived AI market, because but it gave me the opportunity to say that I really don't think that what we're seeing from the A-Lady platform is artificial intelligence.
It's not. It's a dumb parrot coupled with machine learning.
Hey, one of our listeners loved the dumb parrot comparison. And now I forget who it was, but to whoever you were, shout out. Thanks for catching that. And you're right. It was a cool way to describe it. Well done, Brian.
Thank you. I'm sure the forces of political correctness would chastise me for using the word dumb.
Yeah. Well, I did get a phone call from Parrots United. And they're like, "Brah, we're not dumb, brah." And I was like, "Seriously? Because you sound like a chicken." Anyhow.
Right. So
this is what happens when I get a little bit of sleep. By the way, I haven't had for years before now.
Until recently, which is a good thing. We're happy for you.
Oh, I'm happy for me too.
Right. So anyway, I think I made the point on this show just last week that, or the week before, I don't know, whenever it was, that in terms of AI, what we're dealing with in reality is the AI equivalent of technology. And Arthur C. Clarke's phrase that witticism that any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic.
Mm-hmm.
And any AI, any dumb parrot sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from AI. And with 40,000 different skills, Amazon's Alexa platform is approaching being indistinguishable from AI, even though it is not AI.
Yes. Amazon has done what I see as two key things to make the A-Lady platform appear to us as if it's artificial intelligence. And the first one was to drive developers to make so many skills. So you can do so many different things with the A-Lady platform. And the second one, and this was a subtle thing, was earlier this year when they put the time tracker thing in with the voice commands. So if you issue commands, spoken commands in succession, you need to say the trigger word just the first time. And so A-Lady listens for several seconds after you issue a command. I think it's like 5 seconds. And if you say something else, it continues on with whatever you've said. So it makes it feel much more natural and much more conversation-like, unlike when you're talking to the Google assistant, or you're talking to S Lady, where you have to say, okay, G Lady, hey, S Lady, for every single command.
Right. Yeah, that was a good thing to do on Amazon's part. Again, we're talking about the sphere of public influence, the public perception.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably, and I can't back this up with any kind of statistics or studies, and it doesn't even matter how accurate I am on this. I personally imagine there are a bunch of people who think that the Alexa platform represents true AI, and for a variety of reasons, in part because it's functionally AI for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, because, you know, most people don't know much about AI in the first place, and that's fine. They don't need to, and I'm not bagging on anyone for that. But that doesn't mean that Apple, like, there's nothing that Apple has to do now and, like, forever lose this game. As much as I want Apple to advance, and as much as I want Apple to make Siri better, and as much as I want Apple to make HomeKit better, and as much as I want Apple to make my freaking HomePod better, right? And as much as I want to start seeing some of those long haul, you know, benefits that Apple's been touting about how it's teaching Siri to truly understand us and be able to communicate with us, right? As much as I want to see all of those benefits now, NAO, now.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that Apple has to announce like now to, you know, to stay competitive in this field. As a matter of fact, I would argue that in 2 years or 5 years, anyone who comes up with something truly revolutionary in the space is going to be able to capture market share that Amazon currently owns.
All right, so let me tell you what I would like to see happen at WWDC.
Okay.
with Siri, and this is not even a hypothesis, just total wishing. So we haven't seen any significant changes or improvements in HomePod since it was released.
Yeah, and I really hoped that we were going to see some incremental improvements.
And I really thought we would, but we haven't. So what I would like to see at WWDC is a big update for HomePod, and that the reason we haven't seen these little incremental updates is because it would tip Apple's hand, and we would be able to glean too much about what they're planning, and then of course it kills the surprise. So they've been holding back these updates. And so we're going to get a big update for HomePod that really improves functionality. And part of that is tied to big improvements for Siri, or at least some sort of significant addition to what Siri can do. And then come WWDC, all this stuff gets revealed, and then Apple can roll out the updates, and we're all excited. But, you know, I have nothing to back that up, so I'm not even offering it up as a hypothesis. It's just something that I would like to see.
Well, I would like to see it too, and I tell you, there's one big impediment to that.
Mm-hmm.
Apple.
Yeah.
Apple's still going on about freaking audio quality in HomePod, as if anyone gives a crap about that.
Well, that's no one Apple does. Trying to control the message. And
well, is it, or is it Apple being blinded?
Well, Apple even actually if thinking blinded, that they're still trying to control the message.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope that it's not the case. I hope that I can't imagine any world where Apple is oblivious to the fact that Alexa is starting to own, is owning the home automation market, and that Apple is perceived as a distant third in that space to Google and Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine a world in which Apple does not know that.
Apple and has really smart people, and they pay attention to everything. So,
we say that, and yet they introduced HomePod with this emphasis on audio quality. So where were those smart people doing the smart things with the smart observations, noticing what people wanted at that point?
Well, we may have some Chaffin's razor happening right there, but we also know that Apple was creating a speaker and then had to rush to put voice control in it. So I have a feeling they weren't even going to do anything with voice control on the speaker. And it was just kind of
right. That was a reaction. And if and all right. So in the best world, that somehow Apple being caught off guard in 2014, I might add,
mm-hmm.
by Alexa, and then taking 2 years to poorly adjust to that surprise, and then stuffing some Siri into HomePod the last minute, right? In the best world imaginable now, that was merely the first step in their mind towards addressing this, and that the emphasis on audio quality was planned as the stopgap measure.
I will totally buy that.
Yeah, that's the best world. That's what I'm saying. This is the best world imaginable. That's the world that is going to yield us the best results. If Apple is still wallowing in a delusional puddle that audio quality is going to sell HomePod, then HomePod is doomed to continue sucking until Apple changes its mind. But
okay, so here's,
that's not the case.
What would you do if Tim Cook got on stage for the keynote at Worldwide Developer Conference and said, last year at WWDC, we introduced you to HomePod, the most amazing home audio experience you've ever had. This year, we're announcing HomePod 2.
And HomePod Deluxe.
Or whatever.
For $600.
No, you're totally jumping the gun here.
Okay, sorry.
So, this year we're announcing HomePod 2, and the amazing news is you already own it. And they roll out all the rest of the stuff that they wanted or want to include in HomePod.
That'd be great. I'd be super stoked.
Woo! Yeah, because, I mean, the speaker itself, the design, I mean, it's really good. It's not like they need to roll out a new hardware set yet, but man, if they rolled out new software,
I don't expect awesome. The HomePod form factor to change for years. And I think that the HomePod innards need to change. The processor, I think it's got an A8 inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And the A8 is plenty powerful to do a lot more than it's doing. Right? So they don't even need to update to the A9 or, the A9X, or of course they wouldn't do the A9X because that's for iPad and that's for the X series is includes graphic stuff. So they certainly wouldn't do that. But I don't even think they need to upgrade. I think that I get cranky when Apple continues to sell the same model of something for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's for computing devices. For HomePod, Apple can sell this device that's sitting on my desk right now, right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Apple can sell that for years to come.
Yes, and they can do
as long as the software improves.
Yes, they can do software improvements. At some point, they could say, "All right, let's move it to an A9 processor."
Sure.
And they
could say, and we figured out how to make this the speaker array even better. That's possible. And we figured out how to make the microphones listen hear even better. That's mm-hmm. possible too. But really, it's software that needs to change. And Apple doesn't even need to get us on a big upgrade cycle. Apple actually just really, for every house that has a HomePod is a house that could possibly have more HomePods. And of course, there's still the smaller device that I want to see Apple release too.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, if you have a HomePod, you are now almost a shoe-in candidate for an Apple Music subscription.
Yeah, or you mean in terms of Apple being able to sell you
an
Apple Music subscription.
Right, because if you have a HomePod and you want to have the full experience, you really need Apple Music.
Yeah, because it doesn't play nice with your home library.
Right.
Which is also actually needs to change, but whatever.
Software.
That's just nitpicking.
They can do that with software.
They can do that with software. Yeah. Yeah. So I like your pitch. I would be so excited if that's what the, if that's what happened. HomePod has so much going for it in the areas that are least important that Apple, but that are the areas that would normally be featured in a hardware. You know, they can keep selling this thing for years. They just need to update the software, and I hope that that happens.
I hope so too. Yeah. All right. So we don't need to have a big AI announcement from Apple at WWDC.
I want one. I'm just saying that if they don't, it's not going to change Apple's long-term prospects.
All right. So what do you
think? Too early in the game. That was my only point. I want Apple to. It would certainly affect Apple's short-term ability to sell more products and devices. For its long-term viability as an AI competitor, this WWDC is not going to make or break Siri. That was my only point. I'm essentially talking philosophy here.
And that's okay.
More than anything else.
Because we are so highbrow. All right. I have another Siri question for you.
Sure.
Do you think that there's any chance at all that at WWDC, Apple could announce that they're rolling out HomePod APIs for developers so they can make their skills for HomePod?
I think that Apple is going to roll that out first to select. I imagine that Apple's going to roll that out to select developers at first. I kind of thought we would get that already. I didn't think it would take. I think we're going to end up seeing something along. I think we're going to get Siri announcements at WWDC.
You know, I'd be surprised if we didn't. I don't know what they're going to be, but I really feel like Apple's going to talk about Siri at WWDC this year.
Yeah. Yeah, assuredly. Assuredly, they will. Like I said, my other arguments were only about philosophy. Like, there's no, like, if Apple doesn't announce improvements to HomePod, Siri at WWDC, you know, Siri's dead. I mean, that's nonsense.
I agree. Siri is not dead.
Yeah.
Siri is not even on its deathbed.
She doesn't even have a fever yet. She's just young.
Yeah. Young, learning, and growing.
Yeah.
I want it to be faster.
Mm-hmm. I want it to be faster. But all of the areas where the competition is beating Apple in Siri, it's all in perceptions, not technology.
Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of technology.
Yes.
You're so wondering where I'm going with that.
I just roll with it.
We had reports that the FBI has exaggerated the number of iPhones. Do you remember where I told you I was going to read the article?
Yeah, you didn't, did you?
No, I didn't do that. So can you catch us up on the details?
Yes. All right. So when the FBI was wailing and gnashing its teeth about needing to have access, like backdoors into our smartphones, all stemming out of the San Bernardino mass shooting.
All starting from that.
Yes. Yeah. They said that they had in 1 year, it was, hold on, I can find the number. They had 7,800 mobile devices seized as parts of investigations, and they couldn't get into them because of the digital encryption. And that was for just 1 year. And now it turns out that the FBI is saying, well, sorry, we kind of overstated that. What we did was we did significant overcounting, and they had three different databases that they were using to keep track of all this stuff, which sounds so bureaucratic. Why not have one database where you're keeping track of all the related stuff? But anyhow, so they had three different databases. They did, in some fashion, a significant overcounting. So 7,800 phones, way too high. They won't say exactly how many phones they really had that they couldn't get into, but the speculation is that it's under 2,000.
Right. Okay. People want to make a big deal about this, and I understand that. And the thing to me is, it doesn't matter how many devices they have. It doesn't matter if it's a million. It doesn't matter if it's one.
Mm-hmm.
The principles remain the same. And the principle is that a backdoor will be exploited by the bad guys, inevitably. And that we can't have backdoors and remain secure from the bad guys. So I don't really care that the FBI overstated it, because I didn't agree with their argument that the existence of those devices in the first place had any relevance to reality.
Yeah, the number of devices was not justification for stripping away critical security for our smartphones.
Right. And it doesn't matter how many there are. So I don't see, I mean, it's good, I guess, to know the truth, of course. That's good. I'm glad that we're actually going to get those facts out, but it doesn't actually change any of the arguments. And therefore I'm not worked up about the FBI having exaggerated in the first place, because the exaggerated numbers were irrelevant to me. The unexaggerated numbers remain irrelevant.
Yeah, and you know, I think this has worked out better for the FBI. Can you imagine if they'd been able to get the court order to stick, forcing Apple to make the GovOS with the ability to hack into an iPhone? And then this information comes out about they overcounted the number of phones that they can't unlock. That would have looked really bad for the FBI.
Yes, it would have. It would have, in fact, have looked. I don't know. Either way, it makes the FBI look sloppy. And this comes in the middle of this insane political attack coming from the right on the FBI, and I hate piling on for something that I do think is an actual legitimate criticism in the midst of all this political attacking. But again, the reality is that the numbers don't matter. The original numbers from James Comey or Christopher Wray didn't matter. They don't justify. They don't justify the backdoor. The exaggerated numbers don't justify the backdoor. There is no number of devices that would justify the backdoor, because the backdoor makes us all less safe. So,
there you mm-hmm. go. So, yeah. And yet there will be people that look at this and say, here, this is why we can't trust the FBI. And,
yeah.
And use it as a platform for whatever other agenda they have, and that's unfortunate. I mean, there's plenty of things to bag on without having to manipulate.
Yeah, and the FBI, Christopher Wray and James Comey are both still wrong about the need and even possibility of having a backdoor that only they can use.
Yeah, and the notion that they can have a backdoor that only they can use is so wrong. Because if they can use it, so can anyone else.
Right.
So there you have that.
All right. Are you implying we're going to have four topics on the show today?
We're going to do our fourth topic, man.
Holy crap. All right. Well, please, straight man. Brian, oh my gosh, there's a fourth topic. What could it be?
It's going to be Apple and Amazon and their very different pursuits of new cities to host headquarters.
Okay. So as I recall, Amazon did this very public thing where they got cities to promote themselves and say, you should come here.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a circus. It was a big media frenzy for a little while. And Amazon still hasn't chosen where their new facility is going to be, although they have narrowed down the field some.
Yeah, supposedly they have. When we were debating whether or not to talk about this, you know, I asked Jeff if he minded if I ended up, you know, descending and devolving into another rant about how corporate America needs to stop looking for handouts from governments,
mm-hmm.
especially these fabulously wealthy companies like, certainly Apple and Amazon at least has access to tons of cash. Whether or not it's fabulously wealthy is another issue. But Amazon certainly has enough money that it doesn't need government handouts. And I am sick to death of rich corporations doing that. It's not good for society. It is not good for society. It is not good for the local economies when the tax breaks end up meaning that the local communities can't actually support the increased numbers of people in terms of education, in terms of roads, in terms of libraries and whatnot. Now, Apple did that really great thing where they invested in that local community when they built the data center. They got some local government handouts in Iowa, mm-hmm. but they also announced the development fund to invest in that community, and including things like parks and libraries and things like that. And that's great. And maybe Apple will do the same thing again. Maybe Apple actually is thinking about that sort of stuff now. Parenthetically, since I've been complaining about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they listen to what you say and they take it to heart.
Yeah, as they should, right?
Yeah.
But, and I know that a lot of people disagree with him. A lot of people are like, you know, screw government. Government is bad. Taxes are bad.
I like having roads. I like having police and fire protection.
I like kids getting an education.
I love kids getting educated. I love having a library that I can go to.
Yes. I really love roads without potholes.
Yep. I also love that in the summers, I get all these public community events that I can mm-hmm. just go and participate in and don't have to pay extra money for.
Yeah. And if a company thinks that a community is a good place for them to invest and to bring their wares, as it were, or, you know, in this case, their presence, they should pony up. They should pony up and they should pay their fair share. This is my governing philosophy on these things. Again, I know a lot of people disagree with me. I'm okay with that. The thing about Apple and Amazon doing this though is it's almost like pick a way to illustrate the difference between these two companies, and it might have been this campus city selection process.
Yeah, I find it fascinating because they're both going about this in very different ways, but I think in the end the results are the same. They both get concessions from whatever municipality they are going to be part of. And that's, I mean, that's just how they do it. I think that Apple, by doing theirs in a very quiet way, their hunt in a very quiet way, they are more likely to get bigger concessions than Amazon because they can do it behind closed doors and there's fewer people watching.
I don't know that I agree with that, Jeff. I mean, it's possible. It's certainly, let me rephrase that. I don't know that that's necessarily the way it would work out. It is a way that it could work out.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that Amazon got probably hundreds of people, possibly thousands, but probably hundreds of people to spend thousands of hours, maybe even tens of thousands of hours, to dream up ways to make them happy.
Right. And so all of these places spent a lot of money. Yes. And a huge chunk of them have already been eliminated from the running, so they're just out.
Right. Of course, they're not. Those cities aren't continuing to spend money trying to lure Amazon. And you could even argue that it is good for cities to think about this for a company like Amazon, because now they're actually thinking about ways to bring other businesses. I don't know. You can take that argument, But I really think this is a lot more about the differences between the two companies. Amazon was very happy to make this a public spectacle, to essentially get everybody to, you know, dance for the emperor.
Yes, and when they go through the next wave, it will be a very public spectacle again. I was just looking at the short list of cities that are left, and I thought Denver was... Or, like, there's no place in Colorado on the list. Turns out Denver still is. So I guess I get to experience the spectacle for a little while longer.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah. Thanks.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. But Amazon is getting, you know, hordes of strangers to dance for the emperor. Whereas Apple knows what it wants.
And so it just goes right to the places that it's interested in and says, okay, let's talk.
Yeah, and starts poking around. You know, and it's Apple's people that are doing the investigating, right? I mean, Apple probably had its own not small army of people. Probably wasn't hundreds of people, certainly. It was probably actually a team, and I bet it was a team of...
Of course.
Dozen to 20 people? What do you think?
Yeah, let's call it a 20-person team.
Attorneys, real estate experts, development experts, maybe even... Could be 40, actually. I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm going to go with 20. Apple likes to run lean and mean, and you can have a group of attorneys, real estate experts, business experts, and the administrative team to support them.
Right. And they, of course, are also using the time. You know, just because it's not a public spectacle doesn't mean that the governor of North Carolina, because we know that the governor of North Carolina met with Tim Cook secretly. Well, it was secretly. The meeting was secret, but now we know about it.
Secret meeting.
Right. And there were meetings with the local city and everything. And there have no doubt been other meetings too. But they're so much more targeted. It's a lot less of a waste of manpower. And I think that's probably for the best. But I mean, this is just, you know, Apple knows what it wants, and it knows how to go and ask for it. So I don't know that Apple's method would be the reason why they could get a better deal. Because I think that Apple's method of asking is just part and parcel to Apple's negotiating ability in the first place. I mean, yeah. I think that Amazon's going to end. Amazon has had cities and states, you know, bending over backwards to outdo each other. And Apple could have gotten the same thing, sure. I don't know. Whatever. I just wish they wouldn't. They wouldn't go looking for government handouts.
I wish the same thing. And as we've been talking through this, I figured out my perspective on the whole thing. I feel like Amazon and Apple are doing the same thing ultimately, but Apple's doing it in a much more tasteful fashion. I mean, because ultimately they're going to the governments for the locales where they want to expand, and they're working deals.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well,
yeah, so it's interesting. Okay. I guess the whole process is interesting. It'll be interesting to see where, I mean, you know, like we've lived in this world where, you know, Apple's a California company. Yeah. They have a facility in Texas that does AppleCare. Probably a few other things too, but mostly AppleCare. And, but you know, Apple has been this California company, and now they're, it looks, I have a feeling they're going to end up going to North Carolina.
So that would be Raleigh.
Probably.
Oh no, I'm reading it. It would be Raleigh. Oh wait, I'm sorry. That's the Amazon list. How funny. Never mind.
Where is Apple going?
If they go to North Carolina, geez, I'm not sure. Maybe Raleigh. Apparently, they're really open to tech companies moving in based on.
Oh, Raleigh. By the way, it's Raleigh.
I'm from Missouri originally.
You might want to wash your mouth out.
I might.
Why are you my friend? So Raleigh is in fact very. Raleigh's a great city.
Raleigh? Seriously, yeah, it's Raleigh.
It's Raleigh. Yes, it's Raleigh.
All right. So when people come to Colorado, they cannot give me a hard time about street names like Xavier.
Is that how the locals pronounce it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I actually, when it comes to things like street names and city names and stuff, I actually think that the locality and custom trumps all. So like for instance, Austin, there is a street called Burnett and it's spelled Burnett. It's clearly Burnett, but it was Mr. Burnett.
But it's Mr. Burnett.
Mm-hmm. So you know, the street is Burnett for gosh darn sake. I think the locality, like, you know, Des Moines, it's not, it's Des Moines, but you know, it's like, that's
Des Moines.
Yeah. Local.
We local have
customs.
We have Louisville
Trumps
outside of Boulder.
Oh, there are Louisvilles and Louisvilles all over the place.
We also have Arvada, and you can tell people that aren't from Colorado because they say Arvada.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. So anyway, Raleigh.
Raleigh. Right next to Louisville, outside of Arvada.
Where is that? I can't find that story, though. Let's see. North...
Carolina. We'll find it quick because we're almost out of time.
I know, right? North Carolina, Durham, Raleigh, Durham. Yeah, and that's a great part of it. It's a really great community. I can see why Amazon and Apple would both want to be there. Question is, would they want to be competing with each other? They're going to become regional draws. I don't know what Amazon's doing with the tech quarters. I don't know if it's going to be software development or logistics or content creation, or, you know, Amazon is got a lot of balls in the up in the air right now, because we don't really know what Apple's going to be doing either.
Yeah, no, we don't know what they're going to be doing. But I'm thinking both of them there. It's good for each company because that makes it a bigger draw for, you know, assuming they're doing something where they need the same type of employees. It's a bigger draw.
Well, you know, where it ends up becoming a little bit tricky is a huge influx of people, and that really disrupting the local housing market, and the housing market not being able to support this huge influx of people. So, you know, that and not to mention, you know, if they were both to move in at the same time, you'd have, you know, massive traffic.
Oh man, yeah.
Constraints that could be an issue. But in the broader picture, you're right. I'm sure that both companies being there would really probably turn the Raleigh Durham area into a regional powerhouse.
Yeah. I can see why companies or excuse me, cities go out of their way to try and draw these sort of businesses, even though it's like a fecal fountain sometimes. Because if they land them, I mean, the potential payoff is pretty high.
Now you say that, you know, we've discussed the example. We've discussed the example in Manor, Texas, outside of Austin, where they gave Samsung these massive tax breaks to move. You know, that's where a lot of Apple's chips were made, was in a Samsung plant, a fab in Manor. And they gave
Maynard?
It is spelled, it should be Manor, but it's pronounced Manor. Without a D, M-A-N-A-R.
M-A-N-O-R. I don't speak.
Yeah, it's another one of those things where localities trump when it comes to pronunciation. But Maynard gave Samsung so many discounts they couldn't afford to properly school the kids from all the new workers. Right, they, you know, their teacher to student ratios were horrible. They didn't have enough supplies, and this was a couple of years ago. I don't know if that's the case right now, but I mean it is not always
that was bad deal making on their part,
but that's not uncommon. It's not uncommon for these corporate handouts from local governments, local city, county, and state governments, when the local handouts are way bigger than the benefits that the company is actually bringing in. You know, and the winner becomes the shareholder. It's not the locals. It's not the local tax base.
Yeah, that's
it becomes the shareholders who win. And you know, quite frankly, shareholders are doing just fine in this country.
Yeah. Yes.
Pay your fair share. Pay your fair share.
I'm with you. Pay your fair share. Yep. All right. Well, we're out of time.
We are, in fact, out of time. We got four topics in, though.
We did. That was pretty impressive.
And
Yep.
Yep.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The base is by Boom, just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.